Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5, Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Tons of stuff to talk about today, gang. Tons of items going on today, not the least of which is the whole Randy Moss allegations that are coming out of the state of Florida today. If you are just logging on or you're just tuning into a podcast or whatever and you are not aware of what's going on outside of New England concerning Randy Moss, we'll bring you up to date on that here momentarily. Kevin Acey, who covers the San Diego Chargers for the San Diego Union Tribune, will be joining us here in approximately 30 minutes on the program. So we'll get into some Charger issues with Kevin, who follows the team on a day-in and day-out basis. We also have conference calls, and we have interviews from Coach Belichick, Tom Brady, Benjamin Watson, and Adalys Thomas. Time permitting, we'll get to all of those at some point in time during the course of the program. And as you heard the PFW guys tell you, a ton of emails coming in, which we certainly expect this week. A lot of questions, a lot of comments from you. So we're going to get to as many of those as we possibly can. So we'll have those sent in. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Same email address as PFW in progress. Webradio@patriots.com. So fire off your questions, your comments, your concerns, your criticisms. If you like, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number, and we can do it talk radio style as well. I just want to, off the top here, before we jump into the Randy Moss thing, and again, bear with me if you've been along with PFW and you've heard all this already. It's because sometimes we do get a new audience from time to time in here, just like a radio program, or somebody's downloading this podcast and they don't really know or they're not sure of what's going on. And yes, there is some opinion as well as fact to offer on the subject, so we'll get through it as quickly as possible. I would ask right off the top that if you have any thoughts, whether or not you think this affects the Patriots one way or the other, the team on the field or off the field, go ahead, fire off the email and let me know what you think. Webradio@patriots.com. It's all about feedback here. It's all about finding out what you think about particular subjects. One of the things that we kind of jumped into a little bit has to do with the fact that we've been following along the coaching things that have been going on throughout the league, and there have been a lot of coaching openings. And, of course, the Miami Dolphins today have hired Tony Sparano as a former assistant for the Dallas Cowboys to be their head coach. And, you know, this is like the fourth Dolphins coach now, a new coach in 5 years, which is just an extraordinary turnover rate. You would think that even in a best-case scenario that a guy like Sparano bringing in his guys and having people that he can work with, he might take him a year or two minimum in order to integrate his system. It still didn't happen for Cam Cameron, did it? He couldn't even finish the first year before he was pretty much gone. So, he's saying and doing all the right things. If you haven't heard some of the comments out of Dolphins camp over his hiring today as head coach of the Miami Dolphins, then I encourage you to go that way and listen, because, you know, he sounds like a good enough guy. I certainly know that the Cowboys thought very, very highly of him. But don't you find it strange, right off the top, that everybody seems to be rating the Cowboys coaching staff? Yeah, and the Cowboys were the team that failed miserably in the opening round of the playoffs this year. In fact, Cowboys haven't won a playoff game since, what, 1996, I believe? But yet it's their coaches that are all being considered for head coaching jobs elsewhere. Say what you want to about the – I mean, I think it's fine. Maybe it's because they can. I don't know. But the guys that are coaching the Patriots right now, only Josh McDaniels is the one that's really been thought of in a head coaching way. And he came out very early in this process and he said, you know what, thanks but no thanks. I'm happy where I am. Now, that means a couple of things to me. Number one, means that maybe he's just a smart 31-year-old person. He's not very old, age 31, okay? He's a kid, comparatively speaking. But at the same time, maybe he also has some savvy to it. Maybe he's seen the business chew guys up and spit them out. Maybe he's seen guys go into other positions before they're ready. I don't know. Maybe he was adversely affected by Eric Mangini leaving when most everyone thought he was leaving maybe a little too soon. But when the opportunity came up to go run your own team, your own program, especially with the New York Jets, you know, he jumped at it. Maybe a guy like McDaniels is just, maybe Bill Belichick talked to Josh about this and said, don't make the same mistake Eric did. I don't know. Who knows? It could be all of something. It could be very little of something. It could be, you know many. The answer is always somewhere in the middle, is it not? It's always somewhere in the middle of the extremes. Could also be that, you know, he feels like he needs more experience. And he needs more success. And maybe he's waiting for a better gig than the ones that were opening up. Who knows? But I just find it strange that the Cowboys coaching staff seems to be, you know, pillaged right now, while the Patriots have pretty much closed the door, and the Patriots are the team that are getting ready to, you know, try to work their way into the Super Bowl. Just find that a little interesting, a little odd today, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are about that. If that says anything one way or the other about A, the Dallas Cowboys and their coaching staff, or B, does it say anything more, especially in a positive sense, about the Patriots and their coaching staff and their way of doing things? Webradio at patriots.com. That's how you respond to us today via email. All right, before we get to some of these emails, I did want to fill you in on the absolute, you know, news of the day. It's one of the reasons that we're here, and to give you our thoughts and our comments on news that the Patriots make and or don't make. The whole Randy Moss issue today, Moss claimed today, said earlier today here at Gillette, and we'll play this for you here in just a couple of moments. Allegations that he committed battery against a woman are false, and that she made the claim to get money from him. This is what ESPN.com was reporting earlier today, and NFL.com is saying the same thing. ProFootballTalk.com has got, you know, some other twists and turns to this particular case. And choose your favorite pro football site. You're probably going to find out about it because it's right at the top of the headline. So this is a story. The woman is identified in court records. Her name is Rochelle Washington of Fort Lauderdale. She's 35 years old. She filed for and was granted protection against Moss. She alleged that he committed battery against her. This injunction in Broward County, Florida, is up now for a court hearing, a court date on January the 28th. This was being reported by ESPN within the last 15 minutes or so. So there is a court date set, although there have been no charges filed in this particular instance. It's just up for a hearing on January the 28th, according to ESPN. No criminal charges have been filed. Moss didn't really give any details of this alleged incident that may have taken place, saying he was restricted by the legal case. Moss said that the woman was a friend for the past 10, 11 years and that she asked for six figures for what Moss said was an accident in which she was hurt. He didn't provide any details about this alleged accident, but he says whatever allegations were made, they're false. He said the last couple of days he's been fighting against threats of going public with this if he didn't pay X amount of dollars. And apparently he's left it to his legal, attorneys to handle. And that's why the story came out, and that's why he responded today. His quote was, "This young lady by no means is hurt. I did not hurt her." So let's let you hear from Randy Moss, the Patriots wide receiver, all-pro wide receiver, earlier today at Gillette Stadium in regards to these allegations.
You know, before people rush quick to judgment, I think you need to find out the facts about really what's going on. This young lady by no means is hurt. I didn't hurt her, because I think that what I heard was, I really don't know the whole story of what's being said. All I know is supposedly I battery or whatever it may be that I physically hurt a woman. Well, I want to make something clear. In my whole entire life of living, 30 years, I've never put my hand on one woman physically or in a angry manner. So this battery that they're talking about, I guess from a legal standpoint, there has to be something said. So like I said, I don't really know all the facts. I really don't know what's going on, you know, as far as everything that's been alleged. All I know is that, you know, it was a friend of mine, a young lady, and it was an accident where she hurt herself, and to where they called my attorneys trying to get X amount of dollars out of me, and if we don't give X amount of dollars, they're going to go to the press before the game, before this game, anything like it. So basically what I'm saying, I'm actually going to hold off for questions. I just really wanted to get out there to the people that, you know, I am aware of what's going on, and I don't really want people to rush quick to judgment and not knowing the facts. So my teammates don't have anything to do with this. They don't know anything. I think it was just brought to their attention. So if y'all could please just leave them out of it, because they don't know anything of what's going on. I don't really know the whole situation of what's going on, just bits and pieces. So, you know, and it definitely was not my intentions of doing anything like this. And like I said, with this battery with the woman, you know, that's really not my makeup. That's not me. I've never been in that situation where I'd have to put my hands on any woman, any lady. So, like I say, man, before you rush quick to judgment, man, find out all the facts before you start, you know, criticizing me or judging me. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
There's a lot of things I want to see and tell everyone sitting here flashing with all these microphones. And I'm not trying to be funny about the situation, because this is a serious matter. What I'm saying is that it's unfair to us as athletes that when a situation like this occurs, you know, it's up to you. It's up to you guys. It's up to you to you guys to make an assumption. Oh, is this guy or this girl telling the truth, or are they lying?
Randy, how much are you looking forward to clearing your name once the season is over, to defending yourself?
That's one thing that I want to do, because, you know, throughout this whole season, everything's been positive. So why would I bring something negative on? Come on. What we're trying to do, and hopefully what's going to happen if we do things right, mm-hmm, in the next month, I would never, as much as I care and love the game of football and love my teammates, and I would never put myself or them in a situation of something like
this.
Does
it make you think you want to change who you hang around in the future? Will this?
No, because I've known this young lady 11 years. So if this is supposed to be a friend of mine, right, change what? Right. I've known you for 11 years. I mean, I know all you men and lady around here, you've known somebody for over 11, 15 years, and you wouldn't think in your wildest dream that something like this would happen to you.
She's trying to get money out of you?
Over an accident, six figures.
Wow. Six figures?
I'm going to end it at that. I'm gonna end it, man. I do not want to get in trouble.
How difficult is it for you to sway public opinion, just in general, when things come up?
Well, it's hard because of everything that I've been through, mostly the negatives off the field, and it's really hard for me to sit up here and you know, say that I'm innocent. You know, I didn't hit no woman. I've never laid my hands on a woman. So for you to say battery, now I think if there was a such thing in the court system as an accident, then that's what I'm guilty for. But for you to say I physically, in an angry manner or whatever the manner may be, put my hands on a woman physically, I've never done that.
Are people going to believe you?
I think the best thing is to check my resume. Ask around. Now, I've never hit a woman. I do not hit women. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing. I got a job to do, and that's to provide for my family and help raise my children. That's what I do.
You're disappointed at the timing in this?
I'm very disappointed in the timing. I'm disappointed at the timing, first, of myself for being able to be in this situation. But knowing someone 11 years, it's hard to avoid that, because I wouldn't expect someone like that to do me like that.
She said she wanted medical attention, right? That she wanted medical attention, and you denied her medical attention.
She lives in her own house, and she have her own vehicle, so how can I deny her medical attention? I mean, does that make sense? I mean, she has her own house, she has her own car, so how am I going to deny someone medical attention when you live by yourself and have your own vehicle?
Randy, what made you go to Bill, and were you happy with the way he responded to it?
No, I can't never be happy, because this is a negative... something negative or a black cloud hanging over my head. And that's something that I did not want, you know, coming into the season, is anything negative. Everything I tried to do, from getting here early and make sure I eat the right food all the way to practicing and playing good. I wanted all that to be a A plus.
Is that why you took the initiative to go to him? Because you said you went to coach with it.
No, I just thought just for look at all of this. I mean, you look at the only reason why I went to coach, man, because I knew the magnitude of something like this, how it was going to take off. And like I said, if I'm guilty, I am truly sorry. I'm going to stand up for what's right. I really am.
What would you say to this lady face-to-face if you see her today?
Man, I don't want to get into that, man. I've known this woman 11 years. You know what I mean? I don't wish anything bad on this woman. I mean, that's the love I have for her as a friend. You know, even though these allegations are false or whatever she's claiming, I mean, I really can't be mad at that. Because, I mean, if that's what she's doing, that's what she's doing. I mean, if she's hurt and she needs money, that's on her.
Randy, the friendship is over. Safe to say the friendship is over.
I mean, it has to be. I mean, the friendship is over. But like I say, man, I'm not mad. I'm not bitter. I am mad at the situation of extortion. Yes, I'm mad about that. But for something friendly, an accident to occur, I mean, it happens. I mean, stuff does happen.
What was the
Randy,
answer?
When did this
I'm
happen?
Not going
to
get into that.
Randy,
that's for y'all. I'm not going to get into that. Y'all, I'm not. Listen, this is my last thing, and I'm going to say, man. But one thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to end it. I mean, y'all going to make y'all's judgment. Y'all going to say what y'all want to. This week, I mean, today, tomorrow, next week, y'all going to say whatever y'all want. But make sure, I'm very sure, before you rush the judgment that you know what you're talking about before you say it. That's all I'm going to say, man. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, so that's Randy Moss from earlier today at Gillette Stadium on his response to the allegations and to the charges that have been levied against him in Broward County, Florida. Now, last night, a Florida radio station, WDBO, posted a story on its website saying that this injunction had been entered against Randy Moss for protection against dating violence. That's what it said. But just a couple hours later, again later last night, the station then pulled the report without explanation from the website. And this is something that ProFootballTalk.com had picked up on as well. And I'm looking at my email inbox this morning, and I had three separate people email me from this radio station's website saying, what do you know about, what have you heard about this? And obviously my answer is, I don't know anything. You know, I'm finding out about it just like you are. But apparently this radio station now has reposted a copy of the document to its website. And obviously, we're talking about the one and same Randy Moss that, you know, plays for the Patriots. I guess, you know, first of all, why did they post it, then pull it, and then post it again? I think that's a legitimate question to ask. You know, were they not sure about the story to begin with? Did they have to, you know, did somebody call and threaten them if it's up there? And then they found out later after Moss then, you know, spoke about it, then they put it back up there because it legitimized the story? I don't know. I don't know. All I can tell you is it's a little fishy. There's obviously a heck of a lot more to the story. Hopefully at some point in time we'll all find out about it. My question to you today is, does this now serve as a distraction to this team in trying to prepare for this football game on Sunday? What are your thoughts? Do you believe Randy Moss? Do you believe what he has just told you? Do you believe what you heard? You know, that this was something that, you know, they were trying to do to extort money from him and leak it now before, you know, the week before this big game, you know, the AFC Championship game, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, Moss has been the model citizen all season long with the Patriots, in spite of some of his, you know, past troubles, shall we say. Some people, I'm sure, are thinking, I've been waiting for this shoe to drop. And there are others that I'm sure will be saying, well, let's cut him a little slack. Depending upon what the story is, because we don't know what the story is. We have no idea. There's no way of knowing at this stage of the game until, you know, a court can actually, you know, come to some sort of a conclusion. And again, there's a hearing scheduled for January 28th, but beyond that, we don't know anything more about it. So based on what you've heard and what you know at this point in time, is this now a distraction to this football team? Is it a distraction to the preparation for the game? Is it a distraction to Randy Moss? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this particular story today. And that's really it. That's all we know. If you're looking for a little more today, you're looking for more comment on it, I'm not sure what else we can give you other than the fact that it's happened. It's out there. Randy has responded to it. He certainly stood up to it. You know, who knows? I would suggest that he is absolutely correct in certainly one facet of this, and that would be wait until you get all of the facts before you rush to a judgment. He also said that, you know, if he's found to have done something wrong in this particular situation, then he will own up to it, which, okay, that's great. I mean, it's great that he says that. Doing it, I think, is an entirely different matter. I'm not going to rush to judgment. It's unfortunate that the other 52 guys in the locker room, you know, may have to have this affect them in some form or fashion. Is it enough to affect this football team in a negative fashion going into this game with the Chargers? I don't know. I guess time will ultimately tell that. But my guess is that, you know, none of these guys in the locker room know anything about it other than what they might have heard earlier today, and so they can't comment on it. And to them, it's just BAU, business as usual. It could affect Randy Moss. Maybe then, maybe it won't. Maybe he'll use the gridiron, so to speak, as a way to, you know, forget, move on, give him some sanctuary from, you know, his off-the-field troubles as they now presently exist. Who knows? Again, time is going to tell. But that's why I ask you the question. I want your thoughts on it. Patriots Nation needs to respond here. You know, give me some, you know, give me your thoughts on, you know, if he did it, if he didn't do it, what should happen. If you want to go that far, that's fine. Let me know if you've already rushed to judgment. Are you already judging the man based on past history, or do you take it on a case-by-case basis? I don't know. That's why I'm asking the question. That's what it's out there for. You may think it's ridiculous. I, frankly, my initial inclination, I'll be completely honest with you here. My initial inclination here was to simply just blow it off. I wanted to blow over it. I wanted to say, oh, geez, you know, now? Why now? Why do this now? Why have something like this happen now? And then the more I thought about it, I said, well, first of all, it is news. It is something that is going to affect this team either in a large fashion or a very small fashion. But it will affect one way or the other because it's, you know, leading, you know, newscasts and sportscasts and websites and, you know, all over the country, all over the world, for that matter, because of the magnitude of the game that's coming up this Sunday. So I said, well, you know, we'd be burying our heads in the sand and doing a disservice to you, a fan, a follower of pro football, or a fan of the Patriots, if we didn't have something to say or something to do with it. And so that's kind of where we've come from today, and that's the attitude that I've taken today. I said, all right, we'll treat it for what it is. It's a story, and then we'll leave it open-ended because it's obviously going to be a continuing story. And if the Patriots do manage to win this weekend, it's going to continue into next week because that's when a hearing is going to be held. Actually, 2 weeks. It'll be the week before the Super Bowl there's going to be a hearing held. Can't imagine that Randy would be in Florida for that because he'd have to be in Arizona. Who knows? Who knows what will happen? You know, will they actually ask him to, you know, make an appearance? I don't know. Again, time is going to tell, but it is a story that's not going to go away between now and the Super Bowl, that's for sure. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Again, coming up here in just a few minutes, Kevin Acey, who covers the San Diego Chargers for the San Diego Union Tribune newspaper. He'll join us on the program. And we'll also hear from Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Benjamin Watson, and Dalis Thomas in their locker room interviews from earlier today, time permitting. But we got a ton of emails that we also want to get to today because you've taken the time to share them with us. And so we want to try to get to as many of your questions, your comments, and your concerns as we possibly can. So that's why we'll kind of go with some of these things that are going on here today. Let me start with Colin from Bristol. And again, a couple of these emails are coming from PFW. Were sent during their time on the air, and we do want you to know that we do read them all, as we always do. We do read them all. Sometimes we just can't physically get to all of them, get to as many of them as we can. Colin from Bristol here says, I just had a question and wanted to hear what you thought about when I was listening to ESPN radio yesterday. A lot of the shows had brought up a point on how all the writers are going to pursue the Spygate fact if the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl. I read an Associated Press release stating that the Jets had a cameraman without permission taping plays during last year's AFC divisional round before Spygate. What do you think needs to happen concerning this? As always, great show. Thank you. That's not news. That's news that we've known about for some time, that the Patriots, you know, that apparently the Jets had asked for permission to videotape, as they always do, and the Patriots say they did not grant permission, while the Jets said they had permission granted, which I can't imagine happening. So there's obviously more there to that story than meets the ear or the eye. But if writers are going to bring up Spygate, there's absolutely nothing you or I or any member of the New England Patriots can do about it. That's their right. It's their prerogative. It was a story. It was an issue. It was something that was brought up. It's out. Okay. It's like, you know, the cat's out. Now you're not going to get the cat back into the bag. It's just not going to happen. I would suggest that if the more that writers bring up Spygate, and if they bring it up, you know, like during interview week, if the Patriots are fortunate enough to get that far, I would guess that it will probably cause a certain degree of consternation in and amongst the members of the team. I mean, it's kind of like, I had nothing to do with this, and yet I'm still getting asked about it. So, you know, I'm sure they'll be ready for it. I'm sure they'll have a pat, pardon the pun, answer for it. And if they get asked it enough, I'm sure it'll stick in their craw to the point where they'll use it as some kind of motivation. Frankly, I think the whole season, Colin, has been motivation against that. I think these guys have been sufficiently motivated to the point where they want to leave no doubt that they are championship worthy and that they are one of the great teams of all time. I think that's what this story has helped fuel this season. I think there's absolutely something to that. So, to that end, I'd say bring it on. I really don't know what else you could say or do about it. I just don't think that it's going to matter that much beyond that. All right. This one comes from Dan in Charlottesville, Virginia, who says, I was really bored at work this morning, so to kill some time, I started making a list of all the quarterback matchups in Super Bowl history going all the way back to Super Bowl I. Do you guys realize that it's been 10 years since we last had a matchup of two future Hall of Fame quarterbacks playing against each other? Who knew when John Elway beat Brett Favre in the Super Bowl 32 that we wouldn't see another epic matchup for the next decade? To see Brady and Favre square off this year would be an excellent game and be one of the most memorable games in Super Bowl history. And by the way, when you look down at the list of Super Bowl quarterback matchups, one game sticks out like a sore thumb. Trent Dilfer versus Kerry Collins. The quarterbacks make the game, in my opinion, and hope this year's game is one for the ages. Well, Dan obviously is jumping the gun a little bit, already looking at the Super Bowl, and I'm sure that makes Chargers fans who would be logging in or listening to the program today very happy to hear that. But, you know, you have to understand, I mean, there are a lot of Patriots fans and a certain faction of Patriots fans that feel like, you know, this is all a fait accompli. It's going to move on. We'll have the Super Bowl to talk about. And I can assure you that that attitude is not shared down the hallway. Great respect for the Chargers. We as fans and we as media members can afford to speculate and can afford to look down the line and can say what if more so than those guys can. It's not a direct slight against anybody if media or fans talk about it. And you know, fans do it on fan boards and blogs and things like that all the time. So that's all this is. And I would agree with you. I think, you know, the Super Bowl matchup quarterback-wise would be great. But I mentioned on the program yesterday, Dan, and I'll say it again here. I'm personally, and this is my own personal preference, okay, I'm personally rooting for a Patriots-Giants matchup. Why? Because I like the whole New York-New England thing. I think it adds spice to the rivalry. I think it's an extension of Red Sox-Yankees, for that matter. I mean, New Yorkers don't like New Englanders and vice versa. So I think that'd be kind of cool. Plus, you'd have great ratings because you'd have two of the largest markets in the country. And it would be riveted on this particular subject. So I don't think it would be a Super Bowl that would fall flat in the ratings because it's New York and New England. I mean, you could say that about any Super Bowl, but I think people will watch the Super Bowl period because it is the Super Bowl. So, but that's my own personal preference. I couldn't argue with the Brady-Favre matchup. Who could? You're right. Two Hall of Fame, you know, caliber quarterbacks going at each other. And you don't get a lot of matchups like this in the ultimate game where the superstars are actually the focal point of their team. My guess is that, you know, hopefully with a little luck, knock on wood, right, we'll have much more to talk about after this Sunday where that's concerned. All right, Andy in Vermont says, I was wondering, what was Igor Olshansky thinking? When do these players learn? He's talking about the Olshansky comments that he made concerning the Patriots, I really didn't think there was much about it, to be honest with you.
Who? New England? Man. Seriously, I mean, they're more worried than we are, I promise you, because believe me, they know what's up.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they do know what's up. That was Igor Olshansky, the defensive tackle for the Chargers. And, you know, I don't know that there was anything inflammatory with that particular comment. I'm not sure. I mean, they know what's up. You know, well, I mean, all you had to do is say one word. Scoreboard. Look back at week two. Yeah, you know what's up. Andy says, I also heard that old Norvey was mad about it. Rivers is a mouthy POS. All I could think of was a more talented Ryan Leaf. Now, I know he's better than Leaf. That seems to flow through the whole Chargers team, though. A lot of talk. Then comes the whining and the crying and the belly aching. They are a dysfunctional family, or in this case, team. With infighting and arguing between quarterbacks and running backs, I expect to see some of that this week if either or both Rivers and LT play. And on the running, the Patriots averaged more yards per carry this year than they had for 26 years. So figure that out. They can't run. Just hasn't been the emphasis of this offense because we're all used to run first, pass when needed. Now it's pass first, run when needed. And I believe Bill Belichick knew what he was doing with Maroney. Now he is fresh and healthy, not beat up and worn down from 300 carries in the regular season. Maybe I'm wrong, but when you've got weapons on the outside like Stallworth, Moss, Welker, and the quarterback, take advantage of it. That's what they have done. All right, Andy, thank you for the email. As always, we appreciate your contributions to the program. All right, this email comes from Ken in Canton, who says, three quick points. Based on the way the playoffs have gone thus far, it looks like there has been a good case for not resting players in meaningless games. Prior to the playoffs, Tampa, the Colts, the Cowboys were all teams that took the last game or two off. Yeah, I would say that's a very, very good assessment. Number two, I want to see more being made at the shot of LT and Rivers on the sideline. In the shot, LT asks Rivers about something, I guess to asking if he was going back in, and then LT giving a what the bleep kind of reply and walking away. Any more news on that? Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to ask that very question of Kevin Acey in a little bit. This is a question for Andy Hart, PFWB. He says, I know how you love to demean players, but in the Urban Dictionary, definition of having a ball bounce off your chest 3 or 4 years ago was Asante Samuel. Rip him now, but be prepared to eat your words in a few years. But then again, you have to eat your words so often, you must like the taste. Ouch. Thanks for the email on that one. Oh. Way to go, Ken. All right, let's continue on here with a couple of other notes. This is Scott. Doesn't say where he's writing from, but he says, my name is Scott Brewerton. I've been a Pats fan my entire life. Oh, he says, I'm originally from Boston, but I am now studying abroad in Moscow, Russia. Excellent. Scott, great to hear from you. Thank you so much for sending the note. He says, since American football is non-existent in Russia, the only way that I can get real Patriots news is through your program. Commenting on what you were talking about on Tuesday's program, San Diego, like New England, is a team that depends on a holistic approach. Every player is more important to win. Pats fans will never forget when the whole team ran out onto the field as a team during the Super Bowl rather than naming star players individually. That being said, how much will injuries affect San Diego when it is the only team that rivals New England in the number of Pro Bowl selections and two All-Pro players and their quarterback may not play? Well, you know, honestly, injuries will affect San Diego. I don't know how they can't, especially when you have two Pro Bowl caliber players in LT and in Rivers, the ones that are hurt. Now, I keep wanting to say Lawrence Taylor for LT. Forgive me. Showing my age a little bit more here. LaDainian Tomlinson. God, you'd think I'd know him. Jesus, he's a TCU guy. I grew up in Fort Worth. I know LT, right? Tomlinson says he's going to be as close to 100% as he could possibly be at this time of year before the game. I have no reason to doubt him. I did find it curious, and specifically speaking to that incident that the last emailer had brought up about that shot of those two guys on the sideline Tomlinson and Philip Rivers kind of going at each other, not really fighting, but, you know, looking somewhat perturbed with each other. You know, when they were both out on the sidelines during the Colts game this last week, I find it curious that if he had a chance to go back in, why he might not have. Maybe he just didn't know enough about what his injury was and didn't want to do anything to affect it. But then again, I'm of the opinion, you know, dude, if it's your last game, you got to go out, you know? I mean, what are you saving it for, right? So I find that whole thing curious. You know, this is not to demean the backups at all. I mean, every good team has to have depth. The Patriots, goodness, we all know they've been able to build what they've built in this decade because of depth. That when one guy goes down, they've got another guy that can step up, or more, that can step up into the slot and do the job effectively. If not, excellently, you know? I mean, think about that. That's how the Patriots have become the Patriots. And so, you know, Michael Turner, he's certainly capable. That's why they paid him over $2 million to be a backup running back in San Diego this year. Capable, very. Billy Volek, we know less of, but then again, what we did see of him against the Colts, he led the team on a touchdown drive that gave him the lead and ultimately the win in the game. He has a whole season worth, or at least eight games worth, 2 years ago of doing the very same thing in Tennessee with the Titans, although obviously to much less extent of a success. But then again, you can also make the argument he didn't have near the team built up around him in Tennessee that he does now in San Diego. So who's to question what he can or can't do if he's given a whole game with these guys? It certainly seems to me that he's got at least a shot. But if these guys were, you know, all that, well, then they'd be starting then, wouldn't they? So the injuries have to affect the team at some point. Have to affect the team at some point. My guess is, and again, this is just a best guess scenario. My guess is that if those two, let's say LT plays, let's say Volek ends up starting, which I think is a likely scenario. Likely scenario. It's not a it's not gonna happen. We don't know that. I mean, we'll get the first injury report later this afternoon. We'll be following it throughout the course of the week. My guess is a decision won't even be made internally by the Chargers until probably Saturday when they have to, you know, list their inactive players. I don't even know if he'll be inactive. Maybe he'll be deemed as the second teamer to come in if something happens to Volek. Who knows? But I would say based on what we know to this point in time, I would say that LT starts and Volek starts. And if that does happen, my guess is that San Diego probably plays it close to the vest on offense somewhat. They try to let Tomlinson and maybe if Gates can go, they'll try to let them carry the load just to take some of the pressure off of Volek and certainly to take the ball out of Brady's hands, much like some of the other teams that have gotten close to the Patriots this year. My guess is it's probably a closely played game for the first half. And then in the second half, my guess is that, you know, again, with all things being equal, and by that I mean the Patriots not turning the ball over, you know, if the Patriots are able to force a turnover too, or if they're able to not turn it over, even if they don't get turnovers in their own right, in other words, things being equal, then my guess is they start to pull away in the second half. Similarly to what you saw with Jacksonville this past weekend. He also says, living in Moscow, I can testify to how the weather can affect a man. Do you think cold weather is really going to affect professional players? Might have playing in a dome last week been to San Diego's advantage. Furthermore, if LT is active on the roster and is a true competitor, I don't see how he could miss it. Do you think that San Diego may have the advantage if there is snow and wind? Thanks for taking my questions. I'll be sure to be listening to your program through Super Bowl Sunday. And he says, good luck, Pats, and that's Scott. He says, please feel free to use part or all of my email in your program. Scott, guess what? We just used all of it. And he's writing to us from Moscow, Russia, even though he's originally from Massachusetts. And Scott, we appreciate your tuning in and listening to us on the other side of the planet here. You know, I would think that San Diego could certainly have could have had an advantage last week because they were playing in the dome. Yeah, because of the weather factor. But I just don't know that weather really affects professional football players, as you kind of stated already. I really don't know if it does. I think the players have a tendency to block that out, and it really doesn't matter much, if any, at all. All right, let's turn to some matters now concerning the San Diego Chargers. Kevin Acey, covering the Chargers for the San Diego Union Tribune, visits with us now. You're here inside the playbook. Kevin, thanks again for the time today. Great to hear from you.
Hey, I'm not doing anything else. No problem.
Really? This is a matter of a football game going on Sunday, right?
Oh, dang it. Yeah. Yeah, this team, I know you expected to be here, and it's not that I necessarily didn't expect it, but, you know, I didn't. So I'm working a little extra.
Well, but that's a good thing, though, right?
Ah, sure, absolutely. Hey, there's nothing wrong with a good story, absolutely. And this team is a good story.
It absolutely is. I will give you that. Now, I want to ask you about another potential story that we've had more than one emailer send in to us today. And I want to know if you know anything extra about it. You know, the little tete-a-tete that went on between Rivers and LT on the sidelines on Sunday and whether or not there was anything to that?
Which, you know, I get so many emails about this, and honestly, with how busy this week, for the first time, I have not been able to watch the game again.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything more about it. I don't know even know which one it is, but I will tell you this. I am just getting beyond tired of the TV cameras being focused on these two guys, and then we don't know what's in their heads, and yet everybody, we all think we know what's in their heads and what they're saying.
Right. Well, that's fair.
I got to tell you, they're not the closest of friends. They are not enemies either. There is a respect there, certainly both ways. Yes, LT has been set up at times. I wish set up might be strong. LT has wondered at times, what is this kid doing in a lot of different situations? And LT, just like Phillip Rivers does, LaDainian wears his emotions right there. I mean, they are right there. And he doesn't suffer fools. He hates losing. I mean, hates it. And even at one point this year, LT was worried about, and he did a story, he was worried about being seen as a poor sport because, you know, he's just not that kind of guy, and yet he realized he kind of was acting like that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked to several people, and I've heard different opinions on this subject, but everybody feels like the real turning point for this Chargers team this year, and I've really found this opinion almost unanimous, was when LT called that players-only meeting after the team had gone 5-5. And said, hey, this is what I'm willing to do. This is what I'm willing to sacrifice. In other words, he gave up alcohol for the rest of the year. What are you willing to do? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we can read too much into it, but that is absolutely because guys were talking about it the next day. Guys were, you know, talking about it was amazing. And by the way, LT had decided that before the year, and let's make it clear, LT is not a big drinker. But, you know, have a couple beers, and he decided, hey, that's just something I'm going to do this year. And he brought that up in the course of also telling the guys, it's time to buy in. This is going to be our coach. This is going to be the coaching staff. We're a good team, and the season's going down the drain. And the whole sacrifice thing was about what are you willing to do? And guys were kind of floored by it because to that point it was funny. Like 3 days before that, I'd written a story. Who's going to step up? Who's the leader on this team? I mean, you know, got a lot of guys who go about their business right and everything, but you got a head coach who, by the way, I think the world of Norv Turner and the job that he's done, and I have from day one, and it's only, my respect has only gotten stronger, but he's not, you know, this outgoing guy who's going to rally the troops. He's not Eisenhower. He's not Schottenheimer. So who's going to be the leader? And LT surprise these guys because he is maybe the best lead by example guy that you could have, but he's not a vocal guy, so it meant a lot to them. You know what else meant a lot? They knew he was questioning Norv. They knew he was questioning the coaching staff. He hadn't said it, but they knew that he had concerns, and he admitted that he did, and he said, it's time to stop, and you guys need to stop too, and that meant a lot.
I'm sure it did. It's probably just made everybody feel like we can start now from square one and build something, and what happened is this team now has an 8-game winning streak.
Well, and what I want to say, too, and I will defend the teams that, you know, their victories, because I think it's ridiculous that people are talking about how easy their schedule was. It was, but I don't, you know, I saw some of the games the teams the Patriots beat, too. And I'm not trying to take away anything from 17-0 by any means. I'm just saying, you know, it's tough to win in the NFL. But let's also say this. The Chargers, had they had to play New England the day, 2 days after LT's speech, might have had a different result. Instead, they were playing Baltimore at home. So maybe they got a little fortunate that after his speech, you know, they were able to go out and kick a team like the Ravens butt.
Sure, absolutely. Kevin Acey, who covers the Chargers for the San Diego Union-Tribune, joining us here inside the playbook. What can you tell us about the injury status right now of the walking wounded?
Well, I think that it's possible they'll all play. I know that LT will play and Rivers will play. I think LT probably won't practice today, could return to practice tomorrow. The real thing with LaDainian is going to be how, you know, and we won't know this till he's out there doing what he does, is how much will that injury affect him? And then, Rivers, he'll play. Again, now not only is it his left, which is like his landing leg, now he's got his push-off and his plant leg, with his right knee. Both of them are MCLs. gosh, he's played better since he hurt the left. but how, you know, how he's not practicing, and then he's got to go against this team, which he didn't do well last time, and truth be told, even though the Chargers played him pretty well in the playoffs, Philip didn't have a great game against him. But he's been playing all world. You could not ask more of Philip Rivers in the playoffs, so I'm very interested to see how he does with no practice. And it'll be the same thing as last week, where, you know, it'll probably surprise us all by playing on Sunday. At this point, there's no telling. He's a little concerned that it's getting worse, you know, but I think he'll go out and play.
Okay. Could you see a scenario where maybe Volek actually starts the game?
I don't think so. No. Philip Rivers gives them, if he can do it, which I think that he can, Philip Rivers gives them the best chance to win this game. I heard one of the most asinine comments I have ever heard, and I really like Dan Patrick, but someone told me, I shouldn't say I heard it, but mm-hmm. someone told me that he had said that Billy Volek, though he was ripping for Rivers, and he said Billy Volek taking the team down and scoring shows that, and it's a system, it's a system, it's not Philip Rivers. And it's, are you kidding me? Some of the passes Philip made on Sunday were as good as anyone in this league would make. Mm-hmm. Okay, and two of them were for touchdowns.
Sure.
And Billy Volek, while I'm as impressed as heck, and that first play was a nice way to scramble. Philip might not have been able to do that, but there is just no way that you can put what Volek did on Sunday on par with what Rivers has done in the last two playoff games.
Well, I would tend to agree with that. Some of those passes were spectacular, by the way, and in fact, they were jaw-droppers. And I was going back and forth between a CYO basketball game and trying to get a score update and catch a glimpse of the highlights, and every time the Colts would take the lead, the Chargers would come back, and I have to tell you, I was immensely impressed with that.
Got me impressed with their defense, because if you're playing the Colts at home and they keep answering back, you're thinking it's only a matter of time before Peyton Manning and those receivers march down and take the lead for good.
Right.
And they didn't. So you got to be impressed with the Chargers' defense.
No doubt. Now, to that end, let's find out a little bit here, because if the largely the same game plan, I guess, is instigated as happened back in week two, then the Chargers might find their hands full again like they had back in week two. So does it stand to reason that we might see the Chargers, in your estimation, try to put a little more pressure on Tom Brady?
Pressure on Tom Brady, pressure on the receivers. I mean, what a joke that game was. Seriously, worst coach game ever seen out of the defensive coaches. They were, you know, in their defense. That it will, and you know, again, I said how I felt, and it was true. That was the worst coach game I've ever seen. They were getting used to the players. Players are getting used to them. It took those guys another 6 weeks to buy into each other, or for the players to buy in. They lost Matt Wilhelm, who at the time was sort of like the play caller, you know, on the defense, the communicator, and they lost him in pregame warmups with a calf injury. So they bring in a guy named Tim Dobbins, who has no business doing that. He's a special team standout, and that's about it. And really, had anyone seen the Patriots to that point doing what they were doing as effectively as they were doing it, just slicing people up? So, you know, a little bit, the Chargers were like the test tube there. And the league's like, oh, damn, look what Tom Brady can do now. And, you know, and no one really knew about Randy Moss yet and Wes Welker and just how good that all that was going to be. So now they do. And also, Ted Cottrell has unleashed the two Seans, Phillips and Merriman, and it's a completely different game now, and Merriman's healthy again.
So you wouldn't be at all surprised to see them unleashed here on Sunday.
Well, I think you've got to do that. Now, I know all about Tom Brady, and if you rush six people after him, he's going to, you know, tear you down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't rush enough people, he's going to tear you down. And if you rush just the right amount, he still might tear you down. But they've got to go after him. I mean, that's how they've had success to a certain extent with them before. They were able to by getting after receivers, which they, gosh, did they even touch Randy Moss, you know, or Wes Welker when they played him on September 16th? They were able to, against lesser quarterbacks, neutralize that, because obviously everybody tried to copy what the Chargers and the Packers did to them, with the quick passes. And they were able to you know, neutralize that. And Ted has been, in my opinion, he's been as good as Wade Phillips, if not a little bit better in some areas of varying the blitz up and catching teams by surprise. So I'm telling you, if the Chargers were not as banged up as they are, I might be picking the Chargers. I know I might be the only guy in the world. I think I was the only guy in the world that said they could beat the Colts. I picked the Colts, but I said they could beat them. And I wasn't really the least bit surprised that they did. I think the Patriots are going to win. Gosh, every time I'm looking for a weakness in the Patriots and I think that I've seen it, or people say, oh, there's this weakness, I'm like, well, where is it? Because, wow, and the focus they have, I mean, there's a reason. I think it might be one of the bigger reasons that they have been the one team to get to this 17-0 is the focus they have, at least from afar, from my vantage point, is amazing.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of people that would agree with you. That's the singularly most impressive aspect of being 17-0 is the fact they've been able to maintain focus on this. Let me ask you something else, Kevin. How is this team taking to being a double-digit underdog coming out here?
Well, here's the deal. After that 1-3 start, right, and they came in and they bought into all their press, man, and they were one of the elite teams, right, and they were feeling real good about themselves, and they, you know, they got these young, brash guys, and boom, 1-3 and not going good at all, and they realized we're not very good at being good, and, you know, so we need to just tone it down, and they have really embraced, and I know it's a lot of teams do, but they've really embraced the whole underdog thing and the whole nobody likes us and us against the world deal, and hey, if you're going against the Patriots, I guess that's what, you know, the role you're going to be in, you might as well embrace it. And they've actually done real good at it. They've done real well because it was, I believe it was right before his big old speech there that LT came out and said, we're not an elite team. And, you know, they've won 8 in a row.
Do you feel like that there's mutual respect between these two sides because of their relative strengths, or is there mutual respect because nobody wants to be the guy putting up bulletin board material?
Except Igor Olshansky.
And you know what? I don't even know, Kevin, if that's real bulletin board material.
Well, I know. It's kind of the way he said it, you know, and I can see where it would be taken that way. Let me tell you, that's who Igor is. It probably wasn't the brightest thing. I know that it took the color out of Norv's face when he heard it. But you had your question about the respect. Gosh, I'm buying what the Patriots are saying. I think they're going a little overboard. I know that's Belichick's thing, goes in and tells them what to do or what to say or what not to say or, you know, kind of what the theme of the week is. But look, all you got to do is look at, you know, all these fans out here getting upset that the Patriots aren't getting any respect. Well, they're not getting respect maybe from some fans, maybe from some media, but I believe the Patriots have seen the film. You know, I believe the Patriots have looked at what the Chargers have done, and I think there's respect there, and you don't even have to ask if the Chargers have respect for the Patriots.
Sure. I would guess that that one of the factors to the Chargers turning their season around, in addition to, you know, thinking more like one rather than being separate, you know, 53 separate players, would be the fact that they've kind of stopped hurting themselves, stopped turning the ball over in key situations, turning it over at all, stopped stopping themselves. Is that a correct assessment?
You got it. I mean, Norv was saying it, and at some point I even wrote, all right, we got to stop with the ifs here. The ifs are the explanation of losers. But he kept saying, if Philip hadn't made this throw, or if this throw had been 2 inches longer, or whatever. Because, I mean, I wrote something this morning, and it was overwhelming, the number of turnovers. It was like 10 of their 24 turnovers for the season came in the first four games, and they were 1-3. Direct wow. results, too. Their worst loss of the year, Kansas City at home, when everyone was chanting Marty, Marty afterward. Key turnovers. And their penalties, more of them in the first four games, not more of them than the rest of the season, but a disproportionate number, and their negative runs, the offensive line doing a lot better. So absolutely, negative plays. This team, it would have been very interesting, not saying they would have won, but I think they would have beat the Packers if they played the Packers in November, and they would have definitely done a lot better against the Patriots if they played them in November. What I don't think people understand is how much of this league is who you play when you play them.
Right. That's very true. That is very true. And that's why the Patriots this week have been saying, we really don't put any stock at all in the Week 2 game because it's a different team that we're playing this Sunday.
So, you know, teams generally pay attention to the last 8 weeks, or, you know, to teams that play a similar defense, or this or that. You know, it's not like I bet you these guys didn't spend a lot of time on the Chicago Bears game against the Chargers from week one. You know, it's how is a team playing now? And that's kind of the deal. I mean, I don't know. I don't follow other teams as closely, but gosh, there was something that got into the Eagles' craw when they were playing the Patriots, you know, something that got into the Ravens, you know, something that got into the Dolphins that they could beat the Ravens. Wasn't that the next week? I mean,
right.
It's how are you playing now?
Yeah, that's very true. Well, I'm going to ask another question that a couple of emailers have also sent in on, and I don't know that it has any effect one way or the other. But the fact is, it's going to be very, very cold, and it's going to be 15 degrees or so. Will that affect anybody on this team, either positively or negatively?
On the Chargers?
Yeah.
I specifically, it'll be cold, but I don't think so, no. I mean, it will. I mean, Phillips tried to play with gloves before. He won't do it. I mean, I'm just trying to think of ways they'd change.
Mm-hmm.
Not any more than, say, the Patriots. I mean, I don't think the Patriots practice outdoors too much. I would think that if LT were healthy, I would think, hey, maybe that favors the Chargers a little bit. Maybe it still does. Michael Turner's a starting running back for half the teams in the league. I don't think so. I really don't. I've seen too many cold weather games. Now, they've never played a team, not in my tenure, have they played a team the caliber of the Patriots in the cold, but I've watched them three times in my memory win in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
One time was colder than what it's supposed to be in New England on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're bringing your woolens.
I was thinking that I was going to try and tough it out like a lineman and, you know, just short sleeve it. I was thinking that.
You're going to go short sleeve? Nice.
I'm going to wear two pairs of socks and four pairs of underwear. That's what
nice.
I'm doing.
Nice. I think that'll work, most definitely. What do you think, then, the bottom line is here? What do you think San Diego needs to do to hang around, and then have a chance to steal it in the end, maybe a little like they did this last weekend?
Well, one of the keys is they need to hang around.
Yep.
Can't get behind. I mean, how different would that game at Indianapolis have been if Marvin Harrison hadn't fumbled on that?
That's,
you know,
very true.
Very so true. You're not falling behind this team like you did last time. I don't see that happening, especially with Phillip Hurt. Again, got to get – how many times has Brady been hit this year?
Not many.
They've got to get after him. Easier said than done. He and Brett Favre are the best guys at getting rid of that ball quickly, accurately, and they've got the receivers to be able to do it. They've got to hit those receivers. They just have to. And I know here's the deal. The Chargers – killing people with the turnovers, but they're playing the team that doesn't make mistakes. Well, I think they need to hope and they need to continue to play the way they are, which is aggressive, going after the turnovers, and then hope that somehow Tom Brady, who has thrown some interceptions against them before, that he makes some mistakes, or that maybe Lawrence Maroney makes a mistake, or, you know, something like that. Hey, maybe they can hope that Rodney Harrison gets another, you know, some more personal fouls. I'm telling you, I think the Chargers can hang in there, but I'm bringing up things where I think the Patriots do need to make mistakes. I don't know that they're going to beat the Patriots playing a mistake. Well, no one plays a mistake-free game, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
I do think they might need some things in this game. Now, turnovers can either be fortunate or you can create them, and the Chargers have had both. But I'll tell you this, because they swarm, and you've heard this before, because they're fast, they're around the ball, which they weren't in the beginning of the year. They're much more aggressive now, and so when that ball comes out, it's a Charger picking it up most of the time.
That's interesting. Well, I've got one more for you, just because of the dimension of the team changed somewhat since the last time the Patriots and Chargers played. How has Chris Chambers helped this offense, if at all?
Single most important reason this team's in the playoffs.
Really?
And I know that you can't do that on a football team. I know you can't do that. I do this thing before the season where I rank the players 1 to 53. It's just for fun and just to get them mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't do that in football. But I'm telling you, this offense completely changed, especially once he and Rivers got on the same page. You know, and really it was Rivers on the page with him. This guy came in right away, and even before he was catching balls, because Rivers was a little bit off, I'm like, this is the best receiver the Chargers have had in, maybe the 80s. All right, this guy is, and whatever you heard about him, whatever you guys saw him in the AFC East, maybe dropping balls or stuff, one drop since he's been here, and it took him 8 games to do it, and has held on to every ball humanly possible, and just a fantastic player, changed this offense, because all the stuff that everyone talks about that Gates does for this offense, you still need someone else to keep them from sneaking a safety up. You still need someone else to make them respect. And to give Phillip Rivers, in the beginning, he was missing Keenan McCardell, who was gone, and Eric Parker, who was hurt. And that was the biggest reason that the Chargers started 1-3, was that those two guys were gone. And then, so that's why I then say Chambers, single biggest reason this team's in the playoffs.
Wow, that's fabulous. You know, to that end, I also think he's helped make Vincent Jackson that much better.
Yeah, I think so too. Though Vincent, that darn man, he won't admit it. And Vincent won't admit that he was downcast and upset that they got Chambers because, you know, it was a slap. I mean, hey, it's a grown-up world, and that happens. But it was essentially saying, you know, we can't get it done with who we have. And then Vincent decided, hey, I gotta, you know, turn this around here. I'm a young guy, and he's got James Lofton, who's just a fantastic teacher, and, you know, you kind of got to respect him as his receivers coach. And Vincent, woo, man, I'll tell you what, a month ago here, Vincent was a bust in the eyes of, I would say, 99% of the fans.
Wow.
Just because he'd been a second rounder, he hadn't stepped up to be a number one receiver. And, you know, people's patience with receivers is ridiculously low. That's a tough position to learn, man, in the NFL. And not everyone is you know, going to come in. And as a matter of fact, 99% of guys aren't going to come in and be that good in their first 2 or 3 years. And I'll tell you this, Norv believes he's a better receiver now, which is his third year, than Chris Chambers was when he had him in Miami. And I'm just telling you, the Chargers now, whereas they didn't have a single number one receiver besides Antonio Gates, they didn't have a true receiver as a number one for it's been several years. They now have two guys that could be number ones on a lot of teams. That's how those guys are playing now.
That's fabulous. Kevin, great insight. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. And we look forward to your safe travel and your arrival in New England. And like I said, dress warmly.
Thanks for letting me talk. Take care.
You got it. It's Kevin Acey, who covers the Chargers for the San Diego Union-Tribune newspaper. You can get all of his stuff online if you like. If you haven't already discovered it, you go to signonsandiego.com and check out the sports section there. That's great insight. Fabulous stuff there. Great stuff from Kevin. Tell he was in traffic out on the San Diego freeways, was he not? All right, let's sneak in a timeout here, and we'll come back and continue with some emails. Again, this is hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook. We are counting it down to kickoff in the AFC Championship game, the San Diego Chargers and the New England Patriots, Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, kickoff Gillette Stadium here in Foxborough. Web radio at Patriots.com is the email address. webradio@patriots.com. If you have some comments on what Kevin Acey had to say about the Chargers, if you have some comments on whether or not you believe Randy Moss in the news of the day, and whether or not he had nothing to do with this alleged incident down in Florida with this friend of his, by all means, now's the time to sound off. We'll get to some emails. We're going to look into the Patriots locker room and more for you coming up inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com. When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. And hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day.
Well, welcome you back to Inside the Playbook here for a Wednesday. I'm John Rook. We don't need to hear the check card commercial again, do we? That's everything. Yeah, let's go, Pats. I know. I hear that in my sleep now. Oh, goodness. We love our sponsors, don't we? We love them. All right. Email again, webradio@patriots.com. Momentarily, we're going to hear from Patriots quarterback Tom Brady for you. And then also coming up here in just a little bit, we hope that we'll hear from Phil Sims. Of course, the CBS television analyst will be working with Jim Nantz to cover the game in Foxborough this next Sunday. Of course, former Giants quarterback. They just completed a national conference call with members of the media who will be covering the AFC Championship game. And he said that he would like to give us a call as well. So hopefully we'll have that chance to hear from Phil before the end of the program. So stay tuned, and we'll bring him to you. In the meantime, this email comes from Michael. In Columbus, Ohio, it says, after Troy Brown had the punt bounce off of his face mask, the camera panned to Belichick on the sideline. I could see him thinking that we were seeing the last of Troy Brown. Well, I don't know if it went that far. But anyway, he says, after Marvin Harrison fumbled, Tony Dungy had the same expression. I don't think we'll have to face Marvin Harrison again. What do you guys think? Frankly, I think Harrison coming back to Indianapolis is much more likely than Brown coming back to New England. And I think that's just because of the number of years that the two players have put into their respective places. He also says, why not try Stephen Neal at the goal line fullback? He's athletic, he's big, he's used to pulling and blocking on the run. I think he'd be way better than Seymour. Well, they don't really use Richard Seymour anymore. In fact, they don't use linemen, period, with the exception of they will use Junior Seau. You might have noticed, Mike, from time to time now, because Seau asked to do it. But frankly, I think they've kind of gotten away from using the linemen because they're afraid that the linemen won't be able to pull their legs out of certain situations that could injure them. So, especially with Stephen Neal having had the shoulder problem all year long, I really don't see that happening. I don't think you'll see Seymour back there again. Seau's there because this is Seau's last go-round. I think everybody realizes that. So he wants to do it. Okay, give him a shot. Let him go. And frankly, I think that Heath Evans has done a very good job, you know, at fullback when he's had to be in there in a blocking situation. Mike, thanks for the email. All right. And speaking of fullback and the offense and what's going to happen this weekend against San Diego, let's get you right to Patriots quarterback Tom Brady.
Anything that surprised you from Randy Moss?
I think he does. I said over and over again, I think he's an incredibly smart player. And I think that's what separates him. He's got great awareness on the field in terms of what he sees, and he's obviously gifted physically. There's no doubt about that. I think everybody could see that someone to have his size and his speed and his ability to stop and cut and track the football, incredible hands. But I think the thing that there's a lot of guys like that, But I think he takes it to the next level because of his awareness and anticipation of when the ball is going to be thrown and timing of routes and how defenses are choosing to play him and how to set defensive backs up. And there's a lot of things that it takes to be a great receiver, and has a lot of those traits.
During the offseason, anybody could have had him, virtually a song, and you're the only team that has it. Were you apprehensive when you first got it, surprised that you guys went after him, given the reputation he had?
No, I wasn't at all. I wasn't. I had met Randy on a few occasions and always had a very pleasant experience with him. So I try not to prejudge anybody or stereotype anybody because that's what someone else may think. I kind of let the relationship develop as it has. And we have a great relationship. We have a lot of things in common, even though we're from very different backgrounds. I think we both enjoy playing football. And I think that's the overriding characteristic of a lot of players in this locker room, and that you fit in really well here if you listen to your coaching and you do your job and you play hard and you put the team first. So anybody can really fit in here if that's what you choose to be about.
Tom, after one of Lawrence Maroney's good games late in the year, you sort of referenced that you hoped he used it as a springboard for confidence and sort of built off it.
Yep.
Have you seen him do that since then?
He played a great game last weekend, and I think he's played really well down the stretch. So I think any time as a second-year player, I mean, everyone expects such high expectations for him because you can see his ability to carry the football, be explosive in a running game like he was. He's been in throughout times over the past two seasons, and I think he's just got more leadership now. I think he's got more awareness as a player. He's grown up a little bit. I think that always helps, for all rookies. So, he's been in and out a little bit this year, and he's really finding his rhythm now. So it's an important time of the year to do that when the weather's colder and it's a little more challenging to throw the ball. And especially with the threats, I think, that we have on the outside of the field, Lawrence can really take advantage when we get those one-on-one matchups in a run game.
Last week, after the win, you mentioned the AFC Championship game from last year. Honestly, now that it's a year later, how many times over the past 12 months have you allowed yourself to think about that game and use it as motivation for getting back here this year?
Well, I think it comes up throughout the entire offseason. Every time you're thinking about the season before, that's all you really have to go on. The nice part is once the season starts and training camp starts and we get into the regular season, you kind of put your focus on where it needs to be, which is on the opponent you're facing. Hopefully we learned some valuable lessons from that game last year. It's the fifth AFC Championship game, and we've been in 7 years. So there's players that have been a part of a lot of those teams, and we got to try to use what we've learned in the past wins or losses to our advantage, but it's going to be very challenging. We're playing, one the probably the best team in football over the last 8 weeks of the season. So we got to play our best game.
As cold as it's supposed to be Saturday, how does that affect the passing game? I mean Sunday.
Well, I think anytime the cold weather, it's fortunate. I think we practice in it and we get used to hand warmers and wearing extra gloves and shirts and clothes and long johns and stuff like that. You try to just dress warm and deal with it and be a little more mentally tough than the weather. But the opponent on Sunday is San Diego, and it's not the weather, and it's not the referees, and it's not the crowd. It's San Diego, and that's the only thing we can really control is our preparation. And the weather is what it is, and it is for both teams. And I think that we've come to expect that late in the season with cold weather conditions. And hopefully we've been in it long enough where it's not much of a factor. We just have to go out and play our best against a great defense.
Tom, you're extremely confident in yourself. You always have been. But have you exceeded even your own high expectations for yourself this year?
I think each year has been very different, and this year has been different than the previous years I've been here. Been surrounded by great team since I've been here, and great coaching, and the way the receivers have played this year and the way the offensive line has played. I mean, as a quarterback, it's great when you just have to worry about you. And I said that over and over. I just have to do my job. I have to drop back and find the open guy and throw it to him. And I know that the guys around me are going to protect, and the receivers are going to get open, and the running backs will keep us in manageable down and distances and on early downs. So even when we get to third downs and they know you're going to throw, it's not like it's third and 12 all day. So we've got great confidence in the players around me, and I know we have confidence as an offense that we can score points. I think it's a very challenging defense, though, that we're going to face. They got 48 turnovers. This season, they're averaging 3 a game. They got 5 in the playoffs, giving up 13 points a game in the last 8 weeks, and been undefeated since Thanksgiving. They got 22 sacks between Merriman and Phillips, and I think 42 sacks as a team, and number one in turnover differential. So they're very healthy, you know, on defense. They got everybody there. They got depth at corner. They can rush the passer. They got linebackers who are athletic and powerful to stop the run. One of the best nose guards in football. So this defense will challenge you more than any defense we faced all year. And a very different team than we played, whatever it is, in week two. And I hope we play as well as we can. That's the only way I think we're going to be able to advance through this round, is to play our best football.
Tom, is there anything in particular you've noticed about Maroney in the last 3 or 4 games versus the, say, 6 before that? Is there any particular observation you've made as to why he's had so much more success?
I think he's probably just had more opportunity. I think he's gotten the ball more. I think there's been chances for him to run. We were a few weeks there without any tight ends, so you try to drop a bunch of plays with no tight ends running the ball. It's challenging. So he's got much more of an opportunity now when you can have a tight end in the game and you can have kind of your full menu of runs, and he's taking advantage of that. So those, and he's making a lot of guys miss too. He's running with power. He's running with quickness. He's running. He's always had very, very good vision. So he's been a huge help to this offense in the last half of the season. He was early in the year, but like I said, now I think he's especially getting the touches that we all want him to get.
Tom, you talk about Ben Watson. I mean, just speaking of tight ends, just what's meant to you to have him when he's in there?
Yeah, and every time Ben's in there, he's making plays. So he had 2 touchdowns last week. And, you know, he's one of those guys that's been in and out for the last half of the year. And hurt his ankle early in the season against Dallas and been fighting that all season, and again in Pittsburgh. So he's found a way. He's a very mentally tough player, and I think his role in the offense is what he makes of it. And he's, when he has the opportunity to make plays, he does. And he's dangerous as a player. He's dangerous because he's got speed to run faster than most linebackers, and he's got enough power and strength to run through most defensive backs. I think that's how you create mismatches at the tight end position. And to work the middle of the field, like I said, when you have Randy and Dante and Jab on the outside, you need those inside players to complement that, and Ben certainly does, and Wes does too. So it's a good tandem to have in there.
How difficult has that Charger pass rush been the last 2 times you played in the playoff game and this year's regular season game?
And last year's divisional game, that was as tough a game. I remember like firing the ball in there for like 3-yard gains. There was one series of the first half that I had, we completed 3 balls and gained like 8 yards. So you have, you know, just trying to rifle it in there, and we're not gaining any yards. But I thought early in the year it was we executed better against them, but it's a very dynamic pass rushing team, and I think all these guys can pass rush. They're blitz half of the plays. In a 34 defense, it's hard to figure out where they're coming from, and they rush safeties, and they rush, you know, all those linebackers are good blitzers. So they do a bunch of things defensively that challenge you, and we need our best week of preparation.
Tom, last
one. I'm going to let Ben take over.
The offensive line has done this year.
The offensive line?
Yeah. Really good relationship
with
those guys.
Yeah, it appears that way. Yeah, they're a great group. And I think the thing that's been so important to us this season is they've been healthy. And they've played in each game. Copen and Logan and Light have been there. And Steve's been healthier. And Nick's done a great job. And they have great depth and great coaching. So the longer they're together, the more they communicate. Ultimately, I think that's the better. That's where you find the better units throughout the league. The teams and the guys that are together to kind of stand up to those difficult tests each week that we face. No, I was trying not to get killed out there. So thanks, guys. Take care.
Patriots quarterback Tom Brady earlier today at Gillette Stadium. In regards to some of the things that Tom was talking about, I'm going to leave you with two numbers. Two numbers that I really think sort of just hammer home what kind of influence he has had and what kind of influence this offense has had on the overall scheme of things in this season that the Patriots have had thus far. First number is 15. Okay? I want you to amaze your friends around the water cooler or your coworkers around the water cooler with this one. All right? 15. That's the first number I want you to remember. That's the percentage of the time, 15% of the time, that the Patriots offense went three and out this season. Did you know that? That's the lowest total, obviously, of any NFL team this year. They had 26 three and out drives on 167 offensive series. That's just a fraction over 15% of the time. So that's the one number I want you to remember. When it comes to three and outs, the Patriots just don't do it all that often. The other number I want you to remember is 41. 41. 15 and 41. 41 signifies the number of 10 play drives that the Patriots offense had this season. Clearly the highest total of any team in the NFL. Indianapolis, New Orleans, and Philadelphia, by the way, tied for second with 33 10-play drives. They had 41 drives of 10 plays or more this season. So that's sort of the frick and the frack, you know, the fore and the aft. That's, you know, one extreme and the other. They don't give the ball up a lot, and when they do have it, they generally keep it for a long time. Those are just absolutely dominating numbers, and it just adds to the legacy that this football team, especially in the offensive side of the ball, is beginning to create for itself. All right, let's get back to some of the emails. This one comes from Jack in Boston, and we've got reaction now beginning to come in on the Randy Moss story today. And he says, it's amazing that these things seem to happen right before playoff games, Super Bowls, World Series games, et cetera, et cetera. Says, I think the smartest thing Moss did in this situation was to openly claim that they approached him with the ultimatum, pay up or we'll go public. This is not the act of a victim. It's the act of a scorned, opportunistic, well, bleep. Unfortunately, I think it may have some effect on Moss's performance. Not much, but some. I hope that the coaches and his teammates can keep him focused. I'm optimistic that he will still rock Gillette Stadium. That's from Jack in Boston. We're pleased to be joined now by a gentleman who will also be in Gillette Stadium. And who knows? Maybe rocking himself. Phil Simms from CBS joining us here inside the playbook. Thanks for the time, Phil. We appreciate it.
John, good to talk to you. How are you today?
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks again.
What was that story you were talking about?
The Randy Moss story today.
Well, I didn't see it.
The story is that there's a former acquaintance of his, a female acquaintance of his in Florida, Broward County, Florida, who put out a restraining order against him, alleging that he committed battery. And so what they basically are saying now is that, or at least this is from Randy and his attorneys at this point in time, basically saying that they were going to go public with this story unless he came up with a six-figure settlement. So in other words, extortion.
Okay.
And that's what came out today. And Randy went through all of the, you know, circles with everybody else and said that there's, you know, absolutely nothing to it. However, you know, he'd never laid a hand on anybody. This is a former friend of his and obviously, the situation is going to play itself out. But our question has been, well, do you think that this can be a distraction for a team that has really made it a cottage industry to avoid distraction?
Yeah. My answer to that, John, right away would be a resounding absolutely no. It will not be. And I doubt if it would be. That's one of those situations that wouldn't even be talked about that much in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine that would be a distraction to the New England Patriots.
Well, I'm glad that you actually brought up a comment on that, Phil, because obviously you're having played for a number of years at a very high caliber. You've been in Super Bowl situations. I mean, how did you guys handle it in your locker room in the Giants if something like that had come up?
Yeah, I can't remember anything real specific that way, but I think a lot of times when it comes to real personal business like that, it's just not talked about a lot. And I think players know there's, you know, don't get involved in something until you know the facts. If it was directly about football, somebody said this about the other team, all that, then it becomes a little bit of a chatter among teammates. But I can't imagine a story like this that all the Patriot players are sitting around talking about it behind Randy Moss's back.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be happening either. In fact, that would be very out of character for a lot of these guys. They pretty much allow people to go ahead and have their own business. And I think people understand that athletes, especially football players in this particular instance, are public figures. And, you know, you have to choose your friends very carefully. And sometimes you just can't choose the best ones.
Well, John, we've hit a time in our society, it's beyond that. And it's amazing. The things that I saw happen when I played were players and gotten squabbles with whoever, normal people on the outside. My gosh, they would be kicked out of the NFL now and taken to court and sued and you said something to me. You know, that's the world we live in now. Mm-hmm. And players, to say they have to be careful is an understatement. You know, the NFL probably gives them that speech before the season, you know, be careful where you go, who you hang out with. Well, that was about a 10-minute speech when I was in the league. That thing's probably 3 hours now.
Well, that's why they have the whole rookie orientation now.
Oh, we have everything, and you get it. The veterans get it. You get it every year. You got to listen to it, and you'd sit there and go, oh, my gosh, one more time. Oh, you don't want me to hang out with known gamblers? Really? Okay. Oh, and don't carry firearms. Oh, yes, this never occurred to me not to. And look, I know people break the rules and all that, but so they just warn you about every single scenario that could come up, and they're endless, and that list of things not to do for athletes is just going to keep getting bigger.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. All right, let's talk a little football.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I had to ask you a question because obviously it's at the top of the headlines and just about everywhere today. Do you get the sense that this all of a sudden mutual admiration society between these two sides, you know, the players trying to be very careful if you can look past what Igor Olshansky has already had to say, do you get the sense that these are just guys being really nice to each other? Because I don't really think these two teams like each other per se.
Well, listen. In sports, I never played a team I liked in my history. So, of course, they're just trying to keep some of that chatter where the media doesn't come in and go, oh, what about this story and what about what he said? You know, just all that knucklehead stuff that you just don't want to deal with. So just keep that out of the mix and now just talk about the game and talk about what's going on and all that stuff. That's so much better. And in this day and age, it's funny. I just got off a conference call, mm-hmm. and I talked about Eli Manning. You know what a writer called? The next writer says to me, well, if I think I'm hearing you properly, what you're really trying to say is that you don't think the Giant coaches have done a good job. And I go, no, I never insinuated that. It never crossed my mind that that's what I was thinking. But so my answer is, they just interpret your words, they read them, they separate them, and if you can go through a player now, if you can go a couple of weeks without saying something wrong, boy, you've almost set a record, because it's a new day and age.
Yeah, it really is. So with these guys making nice now, how critical do you think having a relatively healthy LaDainian Tomlinson and Phillip Rivers would be for San Diego to have some measure of success?
Well, you know, first off, John, they're making nice. I still don't think we're going to see a game of touch football this weekend. So
no,
I think they're
no.
still going to go after it.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
And LaDainian Tomlinson, of course, when you talk about borderline great players, and, you know, you almost have to say he's got up into that area of greatness, that not having him is going to hurt any team, no matter how good your backup is. Because your backup's really good. Because he's only called upon to handle the ball about 10 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
And if
Danian
doesn't go, then you're asking Michael Turner to handle the ball maybe 25 to 30 times a game. Is he still going to be the same guy? I don't know. So it will affect San Diego, of course. And what it really does, I don't know if it puts any more pressure on the players. It puts more pressure on the coaches to come up with ways to find yards. In other words, another way to get those 120 yards that LaDainian Tomlinson gets you per game by running and catching, how are you going to get that same production? Well, usually you got to be a little more creative in your play design and your play calling.
No doubt. No doubt. I also think, in fact, we spoke with Kevin Acey from the San Diego Union-Tribune earlier in the program, and he said that he thought Chris Chambers' addition to this team meant more than any single move that North Turner might have made this season once he joined the team after that trade from Miami. And so having him as an addition to this team opening things up still makes San Diego a threat regardless of who's healthy and who's not.
Well, yeah, it's there's no doubt Chris Chambers, they've got a mature, high-quality NFL player at wide receiver. And anytime you take that and you team it along with Antonio Gates, LaDainian Tomlinson, you know, that's going to help. And, you know, I've always been a big fan of Vincent Jackson's, the wide receiver out there, and I think he is really gifted. See, you put it all together, they got a lot of ways to get it done. And they showed you, and they showed us. I did the Tennessee game, the first round of the playoffs, the wild card.
Right.
And really, Antonio Gates, a non-factor last week, that they have other avenues to go to. And that's usually the case. But when the star players are there, that's where the football goes. So we're never really going to find out about those other secondary and third-level players because, well, why are you going to do that? Let's just keep giving it to the stars who are making the plays and are extremely productive. Well, we have found out the San Diego Chargers got a lot of talent. They're pretty deep.
Yeah, they do. They have a lot of talent, and they are definitely deep. Phil Simms with us here. So he'll be along with Jim Nantz from the CBS telecast of the Chargers and the Patriots coming up Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time here at Gillette Stadium. Phil, are you of the opinion that the Patriots can lose this game?
Well, John, I'm doing the game, so I'm not a big win or lose thing when I do games. In fact, I never talk about that.
Well, let's take it from this perspective then, okay? Because clearly the Patriots are on a roll, they're on a mission, whatever you want to call it, and that's fair. But you've played the game, and so in that regard, based on your knowledge of the team and your own background and knowing what you know of the other teams as well, do the Patriots have to lose it more so than the Chargers can win it?
Oh, no, I can't say that, John. You know, people, the New England Patriots are not going to go out there and turn the football over, and you can't say, oh, they just gave it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not one of those guys. You never hear me say that on the telecast.
Right.
I don't think in my whole career I'm going, well, it's all about the turnovers, and whoever wins the turnover battle will win the game. You know, oh, okay, wow, that was great. That was great. Now let me go, you know, go get an ice pick and stick it in my hand as I listen to that. Well, you know, I view turnovers as takeaways. You know what? If Tom Brady throws an interception, he just didn't give it to them. They took it. They're going to pressure him. They're going to hit him. He's going to throw it before he's ready. The corner's going to make a good play and take it from the wide receiver. It's going to be more about San Diego getting it done than the Patriots giving it to them.
Okay.
So that's how I view all that turnover and all that stuff. Well, if you just win the turnover battle, you win the game. Well, no. Oh, wow,
no,
really?
Yeah.
You mean if we score more points than them, we can win?
We can win, right.
Oh, if we run it 37 times that we win, well, no, again, oh, really, no kidding. So, you know, it's about physical dominance. The Patriots don't line up and run the football at you every play. They throw it, but still, that's their way of showing you that we have physical dominance on you. We're going to block you better than you can rush the passer, and our guys can throw and catch better than you can cover them and stop it. And that's what it's always about. So it won't be any, we gave it to them. You know, it's always they took it. And I could do this about every game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the San Diego Chargers did a lot of bad stuff against the Indianapolis Colts. But when it came down to it, they took it away from the Colts at very opportune times. And that was the difference in their playoff game and why they're in a championship game this weekend.
Absolutely. What's the matchup that you're looking most forward to watching take place on the field on Sunday? Is there one in specific yet?
Well, look, here's the big question always, isn't it? When you're playing the Patriots, I think the Chargers, the Patriots have shown you can move the ball on them a little. Their defense hasn't just been shut down completely. It's always this. Can you find a way to pressure the quarterback when it really counts? And not every play. I don't care about first down. I'm talking about the scoring opportunities when it's third and whatever. Can you get off the field? Can you pressure Tom Brady when it counts? And nobody has shown to do that, that they can do that. And that's why, again, that's why San Diego won last week, is they pressured Peyton Manning at the right times. And he made mistakes, and they couldn't complete the passes, and they lost the football on downs. That was the difference in that game. Can they do it again this week? That's my number one priority or number one thought of the game. Well, let's see. Can Sean Merriman and Sean Phillips and whoever else wants to get involved, can they get to Tom Brady? We'll just have to see if they can get that done.
Yeah, that's something that I've kind of thought about this week as well, because based on week two's game, and obviously there's not a tremendous amount you can carry from
that
long ago.
And throw it away.
Right.
It means nothing.
And
because the
game,
Patriots are not seeing the same defense.
Right.
They're not. San Diego is not going to play in the same way.
Absolutely.
And so there's going to be a tremendous change in strategy and personnel for this game. So the Patriots are going to have a new way of getting it done. And they're never short on finding those ways, so we'll just see that answer.
Right, and you know that's why I was going with Ted Cottrell in particular, because they decided that they weren't going to pressure perhaps Brady as much back in week two. We obviously know what happened. Plus, you know, when you're playing with found money, and I really kind of feel like San Diego's doing that this weekend. Nobody expected them to beat Indianapolis last week. And so to that end, this is sort of a bonus. And so when you're playing with house money, you tend to go for broke. You tend to say, well, let's go all the way with this thing, don't you?
It's a good thought. You know, John, it is, but you know what? Nobody ever approaches it that way. And if that's the thought, then why didn't Jacksonville go with that approach? Why didn't they just empty the bucket on the defensive side at the New England Patriots?
I think teams are scared to do that, Phil.
Well,
I think they're just scared to do that.
It's not scared. It's not a good word. They just think if they do it, it lessens their chances of winning the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just it. And so the San Diego Chargers are not going to have this, well, who cares? Let's just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do it all and what the heck. You know, John, you know that's not going to be it. They're going to be calculating, and they're going to have deep thoughts in a lot of ways that they hope that, and ways of managing the game or coaching the game that are going to give them a chance. And it won't ever be like, what the heck? We're not supposed to be here. Let's let it go. That thought process has not entered their mind, will not be part of the game, and we will not see that on Sunday.
What has been the most impressive aspect to you of this whole 17-0 run to this point in time for the Patriots? What has really stopped you in your tracks and you said, wow? Has there been anything?
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. I'm a big believer the NFL is about coaching, and the best coaches win more than the other guys. And Bill Belichick wins more than most than the rest of the coaches in the league, and I think he's the best coach. He has proven that. He's developed a system in New England that is second to none. The organization he's been part of, along, of course, with Bob Kraft. And they're acquiring of players. I think that is something I go wow about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's where I start. And I don't look and go, hey, Tom Brady, Tom Brady, Tom Brady. I look at all the surrounding things that have happened to make Tom Brady into what we perceive him to be. And my views on Tom Brady are no different this year than they were last year. You know, I didn't all of a sudden go, oh, wow, he's a better quarterback now than he has been in the past. I don't believe that. I believe he's just got different players, a different offense, more opportunities, and so it showed up in his statistics. But the fact that they've gone undefeated and had this season so far to where they are, that makes me go, wow. Because I know emotionally and physically, hard to always be up. And, of course, they weren't during the season, but they always found a way to win. And they hung in there. And even when they weren't even playing near their best, and the agenda wasn't the same for them and the team they were playing against, the Patriots still found a way. That, to me, that's big-time stuff.
Does this team have to win not only this game Sunday, but certainly the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks in order, in your estimation, to be considered the greatest team of all time?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I can't even think of somebody that would just answer the opposite to say it. I can't even imagine that person saying they don't have to win. They got to win. And we're in a day and age, you know, you got to validate everything. You know, they'll probably go, let's just say they go 19-0, it won't take 2 seconds before somebody on ESPN will go, well, come on. They got to do it again next year before I really believe they're really good, you know. Yeah, well, can't wait to hear that guy. You know what I mean? Of course, I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, I understand.
And it's
completely
way over the top, but you know what I'm saying. And it's,
sure.
We live in this, I don't know where now, but to validate anything, to say, you know, you got to win championships, and it's you know, doing your best and having tremendous season and doing whatever, that's not good enough anymore for the American public or the sports writer or whoever. We got to have something that borders greatness. And going 19-0, well, that's about as close to that border as you'll ever get.
I would tend to agree with you. Phil, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us today. We'll look forward to visiting with you a bit on Sunday, and we certainly will look forward to the broadcast as well, at least for those of us that wouldn't be working. I'll be working, but that's okay. We'll be listening to you on replay anyway.
All right, John. Well, listen, a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you, and it was fun talking about the Peach. It's been a lot of fun covering them this year, I got to admit. I'm a fan, so this big zero under that loss column has really been, it's been something else to witness.
It hasn't been boring, has it?
No. It's never boring because it's like the finale of all the shows you see on TV. We can't wait to see the end, and you can't wait to watch the Patriots every week because you know they haven't lost, and everybody wants to know, is this the week? So that's been very, very intriguing.
Now, the television rating numbers are bearing that point out. I would agree.
That's right. Well, there's a good thing. That's always good for CBS.
You got that.
Phil,
right, thank
man.
You so much.
Thank you.
You bet. Phil Simms, former Giants quarterback and, of course, a part of the CBS television broadcast crew. He'll have the game here on Sunday with Jim Nantz, 3 p.m. Eastern time kickoff on CBS television. Great to have a chance to visit with him after he got off the national conference call with all those beat writers that are talking about the games coming up this weekend, about the AFC and the NFC championship game. So very, very cool. Glad he got to spend a little bit of time with us and with you, especially here inside Patriots Playbook. Let's do this. I've got a couple of other emails I want to get to on the Randy Moss story today, and then we're going to wrap up our program with Bill Belichick today for you so we can get the latest from the coach himself. I wanted to share this thought with you. This one comes from our friend Pratt in Germantown, Maryland, who says, well, John, I'm as informed as I can be on the Randy Moss battery charge situation. And as Andy Hart said, since Randy is acknowledging and bringing forth what he knows and doesn't know to the media, I totally think he's being screwed for money by this woman. As to how it may affect the Patriots, I really don't think any of the players will be affected by this on or off the field because they all have a task at hand, and that is to win a game and go on to the Super Bowl. They were at this point last year. I think it would be too big of a letdown to let anything settle for anything less than a fourth Super Bowl. And as for Randy Moss individually, if Randy is truly a very emotional player, it may affect his game a little. I hope it doesn't, and I hope he channels his anger or emotions by playing extra hard on Sunday. But if the situation hinders his play, well, I think Stallworth, Welker, Gaffney, Watson, Falk, Maroney, they can all pick up the slack, not to mention we still have Troy Brown and Chad Jackson. I only hope Randy will be mentally back in it by the time the Super Bowl rolls around. As a Patriot fan and someone who truly believes Randy Moss, it just updated on me here. Oh, here we go. I hope he realizes Patriot Nation loves him and wishes him the best in coming out of this particular mess. And I think that probably says it very, very well for a lot of people. A lot of people. All right, let's wrap it up. And thank you for all of your emails and all your thoughts and questions. I chose that one in particular because a lot of the questions that were coming in had to do pretty much around that and said pretty much the same thing. So Pratt got to be the spokesman for all of you. But please know, we've read your emails. Thank you, and keep them coming. My thanks to Phil Sims and to Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune for joining us inside the playbook today. We'll wrap it up here today, at the very least, with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Does it help to have somebody like Junior Seau on the club with his hunger for postseason success?
Well, it's great to have Junior. I mean, Junior's great. I mean, I love him. I love having him on our team, but I think every one of our 53 players has to, you know, he can't do their job. They can't do his job, so each and every one of us has to do our job and try to do it well. And that goes for every player, every coach, assistant coach, trainer, everybody else in the entire organization. We got to try to maximize our performance this week against a great football team. And that includes everybody. It includes Junior. And, you know, he's got great leadership and experience on this team. I think that's been well recognized. But, you know, every one of us has a job to do, and nobody can do anybody else's. So I don't think you want to make too much out of, you know, somebody doing three or four other people's jobs. It just, I don't think it works that way.
Bill, how much of James Sanders' safety spot was him? And do you think he has profited from the experience he had last year in the playoffs? And did that kind of serve as a launching point for him coming into the season?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think James had an outstanding year last year. There were some ups and downs early in the season, but he kind of got in there and did a real good job at safety when Rodney was out. And then, you know, Rodney came back, and then he was out again, and James took over for him again. And he's done an outstanding job for us this year all the way through. And, you know, whether being regular and sub, I think he's improved tremendously as a player in the last couple of years. He works very hard at it. Nobody works harder and is more conscientious and studies any harder than James Sanders. He's a true pro, even though he's a young player. He's tough. He puts a lot into the game. It's really important to him, and he's one of our most dependable players in any situation, on the field, special teams, defense, preparation, practice. He's outstanding. He's a pleasure to coach.
Is there a discernible difference between your strong safety, you know, for the guy?
You know, in the NFL, the way we play and the way the offenses attack you, if there is, they try to get you in the other spot anyway. So if it looks like you have a guy that's comfortable playing one spot, then they try to formation you so he has to play the other spot or move the tight end or, you know, move it around so you have to get in an uncomfortable position. So in the end, in our system and in most systems, really, both guys have to be able to play both responsibilities.
Bill, following last week's win, Tom brought up the AFC Championship game last year. The fact that he would even talk about that, would that indicate to you that there's still a little wound that some of the guys from last year are wanting to heal this time around?
I would hope so. We worked all year just to get to the same position we were at last year. I hope we do better this year than we did last year.
Bill, is preparation any different this week because of the possibility of facing two quarterbacks or two
No, I think not really. No, I think we always prepare for all 53 players, and we've gotten into games. The Buffalo game earlier this year was a good example. After the first couple plays, one quarterback's out and another quarterback's in. So you have to be ready for all the guys that are active, and whether they switch them or whether, you know, something happens, just like you have to prepare for all your players to play in the event that, you know, you need somebody to take somebody else's spot. And so that's true on the other side of the field too. And so you have to prepare for all of them and know their strengths and weaknesses. And you know, we can say, yeah, there's a higher probability that this guy will get in the game than that guy. But in the end, we have to be ready for all of them. So that's what we'll prepare for.
Does it help that you got to see some of Olek last week or some of more of Turner?
Well, we've pretty much seen everybody. I mean, there isn't anybody that plays in the league that we haven't seen, or very, very few, I would say. So whatever there is, we go back and get it or find it or whatever, and our personnel department does a good job of, you know, keeping us up to date on the reports and also film clips of players, whether they're playing or not, guys coming off of practice. You know, teams sign guys off of practice squad on Saturday afternoon or the day before the game, and they're active for the game. A lot of times they play, so Maybe the last time they played was preseason or the previous year or whatever the situation is. So we always try to stay on top of that and make sure that we're prepared for the individual players as well as the schemes that our opponents run.
Bill, I know you don't want to get caught up in the forecast, but just the anticipation of cold at this time of year, does that factor into the offensive game plan?
Well, I think we'll take a look at it as we usually do when it comes to closer to game time, and see what it's like, and then decide whether it does or doesn't. But right now, the game plan would be based on the forecast: dress warm. We faced them since then, so and they're very good. They're very good. They're as all teams, we've all improved since September, and the Chargers are playing great football right now. They're playing as well as anybody in the league since the middle of the year, since Thanksgiving. So they're good at everything. They're good on offense, defense, special teams. They can run it. They can stop the run. They can rush the passer. They can throw it. Good in the kicking game. Got outstanding specialists. So they're real good at everything. That's the way they've been playing. And it's January. This is where you need to play your best football this season. We hope we can play ours on Sunday. We'll need to.
What is Noah Turner's touch on this team as opposed to like a year ago when they had a different head coach?
Well, I think Norris run his offensive system, and as usual, it's very productive. Again, over the latter part of the season, they've been the second highest scoring team in the league behind Jacksonville. So they've been very productive and balanced in their passing game and running game. They do a good job of throwing it, catching it, running it, play action, short yardage, goal line, third down, red area, all those situations. They're good at all those things. And Norris has been a very productive, or had a lot of productive offenses that he's run through the years. We all know that, and this is another one.
Bill, some coaches say the motivation they have to do this job comes from the thrill of just winning the games. Others find the thrill in the preparation, the details, and all that. Do you lean on either side of that, or what is it that motivates you to do this job for so long?
Oh, I enjoy all aspects of it. Especially Wednesday at noon.
Did you prepare for that?
There's a lot of different things that go into this job, but I enjoy all of it. I enjoy the preparation. I enjoy the practice. I enjoy the off-season team building, the working with the younger players, the working with older, experienced players, the game plan and the game decisions, practice. All the things that go into it. They're all challenging. They're all have their own place. They're all important. And so in the end, you try to put it all together and get a good product. So,
Bill, you're considered the ultimate team before self-organization. And before he got here, Randy Moss had a reputation of being self before team. How did you, what convinced you that you could get him, you went after him, get him to buy into what this organization is about?
Well, I think based on what I know about Randy is that he's a very competitive guy, very smart receiver, and a tough, dependable player that you want to have on your team. And that's exactly the way I feel.
Of all the things Randy's done to build this year, what has impressed you most?
All those is consistency. Same guy every day. Same professional guy every day.
You always talk about one week at a time, one game at a time.
Is that what we're talking about now?
Do you find it gets easier as the stakes get higher, or does it get harder as the stakes get higher?
That's all the same, so I don't know. It's one week in September, it's one week in October, it's one week in January. So it's all the same, really. Back then, you're trying to talk about all the games that are going ahead. Now we're trying to talk about all the games that have come behind. So it's just a question of what point you are in that journey, but it really doesn't matter. It's just where you are at that particular time.
Bill, looking back at the Colts and Yale game, their defense never really stopped the Colts, maybe other than the last series, but they had those two big turnovers in the red zone that you could argue turned the game. Can you talk about San Diego's strength, I guess, which is forcing turnovers in offense?
They do a great job of forcing turnovers. 18 fumbles, 30 interceptions in the regular season, and then follow right back up in the postseason with another, five turnovers in two games. So basically they're averaging three turnovers a game, and they make the offense pay for mistakes, and they force a lot of plays, like fumble that Merriman had in Tennessee game where he, stripped the runner from behind. Sometimes they're opportunistic and they take advantage of a tip ball or, a mistake by the offense. But a lot of those plays are caused by the defense, by a good read or reaction or hit that knocks the ball loose, or they make a play on the ball that, some of Cromartie's interceptions are just some spectacular plays, really. The amount of ground he covers and his play on the ball is... It's some of the real highlight plays of the year. So they come in a lot of different forms. And, when Rivera was in Chicago last year, that was a little bit of their trademark. They came in here and got five against us. It's not saying it's all him. I'm saying it's part of that philosophy that San Diego has, that Rivera had at Chicago, that now has, in some way or part traveled to San Diego. And they've been very... very productive with it.
Bill, you've seen a lot of great linebackers, so you've coached a lot of them. How much does Phillips and Merriman make each other better, the fact they're playing together?
I think it helps when you have two perimeter players, whatever they play, whether it's outside linebackers, corners, wide receivers, to a certain extent tight ends, but where you can balance off the formation and not be, heavily tilted one way or the other. Going back to the Giants days, when you had a situation there of, Lawrence Taylor, it was easy to run away from him until you had Carl Banks, and then it wasn't so easy to run away from Taylor and into Banks, or away from Banks and into Taylor. And so, again, it's kind of the same thing when you have, whether it's two corners or two linebackers or, two receivers. If you only have one, then sometimes it's possible for the other team to scheme and work away from that guy or double him or, whatever, however you want to look at it, whatever the position is, versus if you have two, then you're going away from one, but you're going into the other. So I think it does help.
Bill, you've got a lot of guys with championship game experience. Does that help in the week leading into the preparation, knowing what to expect?
I don't know. I think what helps the most is going out there and playing well. There was a time when we didn't and we won, and so I don't think that if that was all there was, then St. Louis would have won. So they had more than we did. So I don't think that's the bottom line. I don't think it hurts. I don't think any experience hurts. But I think there's what's more important is to go out and execute and perform well. So okay, all right, thank you.